Welcome to Pushing the Limits with your host, Lisa Tarmaty, where it's all about health optimization, anti-aging, longevity, and being the very best you can be. Brought to you by lisatarmaty.com.
Well, hi everyone, and welcome back to this week's episode of Pushing the Limits. Today I have a very special guest, and I've been wanting to interview this wonderful doctor for a long, long time. He has, whether he's known it or not, influenced my mum's journey with her recovery. And as you, my listeners, will know, with mum's brain aneurysm, I went down a lot of tracks to find answers to help her, and this was one of the ones that I went down. So today I have Dr. Lou Lim from the V-Lite company with us. Dr. Lou, welcome to the show.
Hi, Lisa. Thank you for inviting me to speak with you.
It's very exciting to talk to you. You're an incredible man, an incredible scientist, and you're an engineer. You have an MBA, and you're a neuroscientist and a natural doctor. How do you do all of that in one lifetime?
I'm older than you. I look, baby. It's a number of years.
Incredible.
Well, my emphasis today is really on this field of photobiomodulation, and photobiomodulation spread out in a lot of areas. It's, as you might probably know, so it covers anything from aesthetic, cosmetic, wound healing, and skin rejuvenation, hair growth, and affecting when you go into the physiological side, it can affect your blood circulation. Mm-hmm. it can help with pain, and that calls for an understanding of what the different parameters can do, the mechanisms. Mm-hmm. And I feel that there's a lot to be discovered for the brain, what it can do. So that's where my emphasis is.
Yep.
So it requires background in, of course, neuroscience and physiology, natural medicine, engineering. I think that plays a very big part. So it's nice to have these kind of skills together.
So photobiomodulation, it's a very big word, and a lot of people probably haven't even heard of what that is. Can you break that down, the photo part, the bio part, and the modulation part, and what it actually means?
Yeah, for a long time, this whole field was first discovered in 1967. So it went through the process of being called phototherapy, cold laser therapy, low-level laser therapy. For many years, it was known as low-level light therapy because it doesn't necessarily have to be laser. Mm-hmm. And a few years ago, the scientists in this world got together and say, hey, we've got to have a unifying description of what this modality is, and we can go ahead and register with the medical, I think it's like a medical library in the US. Mm-hmm. Then you can get codes and be recognized and so on. So I guess people got together and decided, okay, let's call it photobiomodulation. And I thought, this is a really big word.
It is a big word.
It's a new word as well. But I guess over the last few years, it kind of got more and more accepted, and now it flows off people's tongue more easily. And a photo is like, bio is to do with the biology, the organisms, the body, and so on. A modulation is to change, to modify. Mm-hmm. For either, generally we aim for the good, but overdoing it can be bad. So it's actually modulating or modifying the body.
So when we talk, we think about lasers. I know a lot of ladies out there would know that lasers are very good for the skin. You go to your local beautician and they do laser therapy for skin rejuvenation. I know that there was a study, an older study on rats or mice where the hair grew. So they use it for hair regeneration, for skin regeneration. But there's a whole lot more to lasers and and photobiomodulation than just hair and skin. Can you explain the different wavelengths and what they do and the different colours of the spectrum, if you like, of the photo spectrum or the wavelengths and what they do, the different wavelengths and the power of the hair?
Yeah, so when you talk about photobiomodulation, we're mainly referring to red and near-infrared light.
Mm-hmm.
And why do we constrain, you know, this this window? And that's for several reasons. We, you know, you have, if you go to the high energy end, that would be blue, and you know, you go to ultraviolet, and then you go to X-ray, gamma ray, and so on. Then you have the longer wavelength beyond near infrared. You get far infrared. Then you get into microwave and radio waves.
Yep.
So it gives you a sense that these are all electromagnetic waves.
Uh-huh.
So it's not like they're all light. They're not just all light or X-ray. And that covers radio waves. So it gives you a sense that the longer the wavelength, the further it penetrates. Radio waves go through anything.
Okay.
The shorter wavelength is high energy. It doesn't penetrate much, not even the skin, even when you go into the very short wavelength, shorter than, say, ultraviolet C. And then you go into X-ray and so on. But very high energy can start getting you to imaging, but that's but then you get into that spectrum where it can mutate, you know, they call it ionizing, mutate your DNA and cause you problems like cancer.
Yep.
But red and infrared light are absorbed by the mitochondria in the cells. Mitochondria are mainly known to be responsible for your energy. Mm-hmm. Cellular energy, your energy, anything you do, you think, involves energy from the mitochondria. Now, so the absorption is mainly within the mitochondria. There is something called the respiratory chain,
mm-hmm.
or the electronic transport chain.
Yep.
And those of us who study biology will remember that it is responsible for creating the energy. So this
yes,
chain.
Your ATP.
Yep, the ATP. And the theory is red and infrared light gets absorbed
mm-hmm.
in the respiratory chain. That releases more ATP and it frees this nitric oxide that's clogged up in the chain.
Yep.
And causes the cell to function below normal. So it frees that, nitric oxide goes into your body, it helps with your circulation because that's what nitric oxide does.
Mm-hmm.
Then it does other things like, you know, it has releases transient free radical, ROS, reactive oxygen species, which are also signaling molecules, then leads to gene transcription.
Yep.
The creating this protein that helps to heal. So you get your skin rejuvenation because it releases these proteins, create these proteins that causes healing in the tissues, you know, that improve your collagen level.
Wow.
So that kind of thing. So it's mainly red and infrared light. There are some debate now about whether it is mainly, for many years, most of us have been thinking that it's in the enzyme called cytochrome C oxidase in the one of the
yep
side of my respiratory chain doing this, but today maybe it's not. Maybe it is to do with you know that trans well it, that's the membrane the in well I forget exact term, but it's the membrane the water. What the membrane, the water in a membrane layer.
Yep.
Which
is and, yeah, the IMPs. Yep.
Yeah. So that it may actually reduce the viscosity and help the some people call it a nanometer, but it's mm-hmm. spin that creates more ATP to be able to do that better.
Wow. Okay. So if we're looking
the interfacial membrane fluid. Yeah.
So mitochondria is a word, you know, that is extremely important. I don't think a lot of people understand what mitochondria do. So mitochondria are like the little power packs in every single cell, and it's actually an ancient bacteria that's come into the human system billions of years ago when we were evolving. And the mitochondria is responsible for this energy production in the cell. So when you have a photobiomodulation device from, say, your company, and it is sending in a red or a near-infrared light wave, the mitochondria, it stimulates the mitochondria without going into the biochemical processes, but it stimulates the mitochondria to create more energy and more energy for healing. Is that sort of a very, you know, high level sort of layperson's overview of how that works?
Yeah. I guess you know, it comes down to something called gene transcription.
Yes.
So to produce the right
read.
Yeah. That leads to this. So I guess energy is a very, you know, easy way to remember it, but it really involves producing the right proteins. You don't want to overdo it. You know, when you overdo it, you overwhelm. You produce more free radicals than you want to.
Uh-huh.
You can get negative effects. So some understanding of the, you know, it being low level and just do the necessary thing and not overdo it, not doing it too often. Can lead to good things. Yeah.
Okay. So it's a bit like, you know, exercise. You know, the right amount of exercise is good for us. Doing too much is not good for us, or not. You know, this is why you build your fitness up in the body. So it creates a hormetic stress, if you like. Is that what these devices are doing? That the light is doing, creating a hormetic stress that is then, or is it?
Well, actually, there's a lot of similarity, right? Too much of exercise, you produce, the stress comes from a lot of free radicals, and the body is overwhelmed with free radicals, not being able to clear it, you know, and then even your mitochondria is under some sort of stress because, actually, there was just a paper that was published a few days ago saying that the mitochondria is also linked to the anxiety level.
Wow.
Because, you know, this... If it's stress, you create this unnecessary amount of,
stress hormones.
You know, you're getting these stress hormones in your body, in the same way that is causing you anxiety. So the mitochondria well-being is key.
Mm.
You want to release it from stress. So I guess that's one of the reasons why. Low-level light therapy, photobiomodulation is helpful because it just supports the mitochondrial respiratory chain, this whole functionality to reduce it. So that's one way to look at it.
And you've developed, so you have a company called V-Light. So everyone, we're going to, you know, put the links in the show notes to the devices that V-Light has and all the publications and all the clinical studies around these incredible devices. And for those watching on the video channel here, these are two of the devices that I've had for a number of years. And Dr. Lou, you've got the most advanced one there. I've got the intranasal. Wow. That's a serious piece of kit.
The neuro. There's like yours. It goes to the nose.
Intranasal. Yep.
That goes to the brain. Right?
Brilliant. So for those watching on video, you can see Dr. Lou has the neuro, which is one of the big transcranial photobiomodulation devices. And the ones that I've got here, I've got a 655 prime. It's an intranasal. So, and another one with the infrared wavelength of 810. And I use those both pretty much every day to every second day for 20 minutes. And look how good my brain's going. and more importantly, how good my mum's brain is now going. So can you explain why intranasal? So we have to get the light on the inside of the body in order for this to work. Now, it's pretty hard to get light through your – we know about vitamin D synthesis when we're in the sun and what an avalanche of things that causes in the body, good things. Can you explain why intranasal, and are there other methods to get it into the body?
Yeah, there is. You know, we've got this inventor discovered in actually about Yeah, it's 15 years ago now, actually, quite a long time already. And so when we got it working, because this whole field of photo biomodulation in the 80s got into, you know, a stage where the Russians started to introduce intravenous blood irradiation with red and infrared light. Now, the theory is you put it there instead of on your skin and you provide more power, this gets into your blood circulation directly. Mm-hmm. And what they found was it actually helps with a number of things. You know, the circulation improves better. The users are recovering more quickly from injuries, from surgery. It seems to help with preventing heart failures and helping to recover. Yeah. Then it led to studies of diabetes and, you know, and finding that our users are getting more better profile, of the marker profile from your annual, you know, examination,
your checkups,
medical exam. Now, then it wasn't really fully understood for a long time, but they know that the effect is systemic, and quite a lot of work was done later, and researchers in Israel were finding that when they direct light in animal study to the femur of the thigh bone, you know, of the rodent.
Yep.
And they had scarred heart tissue from simulated heart attack or from simulated brain injury or even Alzheimer's disease. They found that the recovery is better and they can see the improvement in the markers as well.
Wow.
And in the you know, not too long ago, I think under a few years ago, the researchers in Australia, particularly at the University of Sydney, was trying to understand, because they were doing studies in Parkinson's in animals, and they found a similar experiment. You know, mice or rats that were bred with transgenic rats with Parkinson's symptoms actually improved when they directed light to the thigh.
Wow.
Then they did that with later on transgenic mice with Alzheimer's disease.
So even though it was in the thigh, it was having a systemic effect.
I think they're funded now to do a study on what happens if you do a probe into the brain. They actually done it on animals and found that it seems to improve the markers in that area of the brain.
Wow.
So light does something. It does, you know, where it's close to it, it helps a lot. Even though it's far away from me, it has this systemic effect. And they tried to explain it. At the time, some descriptions are used, like the abscopal effect, kind of like cancer, when you treat one side, another side of the body respond.
Yep.
They call it circulating factors without knowing what it was. But it was just, I think, last year in 2019, that there was a paper published showing that there are lots of free-floating mitochondria in the body, in the blood. So now we understand that photobiomodulation affects the mitochondria. Now, what if you have now circulating mitochondria all over your body?
Wow.
That kind of really, it just rung a bell, you know, to many of us. That's it, you know, that's one of the main explanations of why it seems to have this, you know, has a systemic effect, because mitochondria is in your blood circulates through your system several times a minute, so it gets all over your body. And there was another study in Montreal in 2 or 3 years back, three or 4 years back, where the mitochondria also gets deposited into various parts of the body where it is needed. So you put all these together, it kind of explains from your nose.
Yeah.
And the nose is good because the blood vessels, are close to the surface, the membrane. So capillaries are very close, pretty dense. Then this is where it gets, you know, it gets
exposure.
all throughout the whole body.
So when you stick it up your nose, so I'm going to demonstrate for those watching on video. Basically, you put it up your nose like this, and this is the 810. So there's all the blood in the body is going past this area here, isn't it? So it's actually those light waves are hitting your entire blood supply through the intranasal delivery mechanism. Is that right?
Yeah, that. The nasal area is actually one of the areas where there's more blood capillaries per square centimeter than most part of your body. And it's necessary because, it controls the moisture level in your, and that you get processed very quickly. Now, I'm involved in quite a lot of research on its effect on the brain. And that's quite important. When we use the 810, nanometers in your infrared, it penetrates deeper.
Yep.
That suddenly hits the olfactory bulb. And the olfactory bulb is obviously part of your brain. And there's a direct channel to the memory area, like hippocampus.
The hippocampus, yep.
Yeah. And then we've noticed improvement in memory function. So that led us to, later develop all these other things and do a clinical trial on Alzheimer's disease, which we're doing now. It also, there's a direct channel to the thalamus, which is, thalamus does this. It receives signals from other parts of your body and distributes to different parts of your brain to process it. Mm-hmm. But that, the olfactory is very important. When you have a certain neurological condition, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and a number of other things, you lose the sense of smell.
Wow.
Early, before even other senses.
That's one of the warning signs of Alzheimer's, isn't it? In the left side, I believe, when you lose part of your smell.
Yeah, so it's apparently, yeah.
It's an early detection thing. So the olfactory, so your smell, very closely connected or very close proximity to the hippocampus, which processes memory, and to the thalamus.
Just interrupting the show to let you know about our patron community here on the podcast at Pushing the Limits. We've been going for 8 years and we really need your support to keep the show on air and free to everybody so that everyone gets this fantastic information from all these great doctors, scientists, athletes, business people from all around the world. So we would love you to come and join us. You get a lot of exclusive member benefits when you do, but really it's about supporting the show and keeping it on air. And for a coffee or two a month, that would be fantastic if you can come and join us. You can go to patron.lisatarmaty.com. That's patron.lisatarmaty.com and check it all out.
No, okay. It has a direct connection actually to the hippocampus.
Wow. Okay. So this is why it can have an effect. So when I'm putting the V-light up my nose there, the 810, that is stimulating the mitochondria in the blood that's passing that area in the brain, but also penetrating deeper into the hippocampus and to the thalamus.
Yeah. So to be technical, the direct channel is to the entorhinal cortex, which is like the gateway to the hippocampus. Wow. So they're kind of all part of the whole system.
And you are doing a clinical trial at the moment with Alzheimer's patients, is that correct?
Yeah.
And when would this, be... it's hard to comment on a clinical trial in the middle of it. But what are you looking for? What's the hypothesis behind this clinical trial? What are you hoping to see?
Well, we are, our target demographic is actually moderate to severe.
Yep.
Alzheimer's patient.
Okay.
And drug companies have for a long time tried to address the milder form, because hopefully you get a result. The trials have generally failed. So this is the mild cognitive impairment. So now drug companies are researching into a prodromal stage before the symptoms appear. Hopefully one day they get becomes a vaccine, you use it and it prevents you from getting Alzheimer's disease. And later on, I guess they're going to pair it with, if you have copies of certain genes that are related to Alzheimer's disease.
APOE,
APOE gene. Yeah.
Yep, just had mine tested. So, right. Yeah.
So that's happening right now. But there's a company, Biogen, I think they got fast. Just recently they got fast track by fast track review by FDA because they show some. They reanalyzed the whole data in one of the clinical trials and say, okay, maybe there's something there. Not sure the details, but they're attempting, you know, to do a fast track to FDA. But you've got to understand that Alzheimer's disease is multifactorial. It involves many, many things.
Yeah.
It's just not just the genes. It's the interplay of the genes. The markers are not just amyloid, beta amyloid. Or its precursors, there's the tau aspect of it.
Yep.
And the growing number of scientists who believe that this long-held belief of the beta amyloid being the main thing is maybe not, you know, the progression of Alzheimer's is maybe more to do with the tau. You know, tau is where these markers are associated with your neurons strangling itself from the inside.
Wow.
Where the beta amyloid is outside.
Yeah, and the synaptic. Yeah,
it's dealing with the pathogens and things that don't, you know, that are outside of the neurons. So there are many, many, many things in play. Genes, when you talk about genes, it's very, very complex.
Yep.
Then there is other factors introduced. We found that if you undergo stress or brain injury, it just triggers it. And I found that to be the case as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. So yeah. Your trial's been suspended at the moment because of the pandemic. That's a real shame. But what you've already had a number of trials done in the past in different areas. What has it been shown in those trials? What have you managed to sort of show that photobiomodulation does in delivering it through these mechanisms?
Before I saw that, the interesting thing about photobiomodulation is, and this, I guess it relates to functional medicine, where you try to address this whole problem at its most fundamental basic level, which is the cell, the mitochondria.
Yes.
Mitochondria is everywhere.
Yep.
All the energy comes from there and a lot of other things happening. So I guess if you can tackle it at a very basic fundamental level, then these other symptoms and markers that come many levels above can be, you know, hopefully you will try to resolve that.
That makes so much sense to me. Yeah, absolutely.
And so so for this particular demographics we're doing, like I mentioned, moderate to severe, and they are pretty far advanced, you know, almost all of them require the involvement of caregivers because they're not independent. So we have a battery of tests that particularly apply to them, the most severe cases. But in our earlier case reports, we used, tests for cognitive impairment, you know, ADAS-COG, you know, Alzheimer's mm-hmm. disease assessment scale for mm-hmm. cognition. We use MMSE, mini mental state exam. This is amazing. Then we have clinical, observations and reports. And so we found that we started seriously studying Alzheimer's patients and dementia patients in 2015. And we published this in 2017. This is a small number of cases. With the neuron you saw, we pulse at 10 hertz, 10 times a second. And that is, we do it because it used the data from an animal study done at Harvard and Massachusetts General by Michael Hamlin's lab. Shows mm-hmm. that pulse at 10 hertz, it shows the animal recovery more quickly from brain injury.
Wow.
So we use 10 hertz, but he hasn't explored a whole range of, you know, frequencies. So use that, it seems to help in these small studies. Then University of California, San Francisco, Professor Linda Chow did a completely independent study She wanted to replicate what we did and say, okay, use 40 Hertz, because 40 Hertz, in 2016, there were a lot of publications. It's to do, you know, it shows that 40 Hertz is a gamma. This is associated with, it's what you find when your hippocampus is trying to encode memory. So it shows 40 Hertz.
Uh-huh, okay.
40 Hertz helps with memory encoding. It helps to reduce the excitotoxicity in your brain when you're encoding memory and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then MIT published a very important study towards the end of 2016. They showed that when you put animal in a cage, the rodents in the cage, you pulse light just externally at 40 times a second, 40
yep.
Hertz. The markers, the beta amyloid count in the brain reduced significantly.
I've heard of that. I've heard of that study. Yeah. And they've been using it.
Behavior.
Yep.
Right. So we thought, okay, you know, they are still doing this. They're still doing studies. They're trying to do human studies. And what they found was the markers in the visual cortex reduced drastically, but not anywhere else. Not even the hippocampus. And I reckon that's because when the animals in the cage, you know, at 40 Hertz, it was processed through the eyes, goes to the visual cortex,
yep.
and then the markers reduce significantly.
Oh.
So for me.
So intranasal.
In photobiomodulation, what we do is we direct light with near infrared light so it can penetrate.
Yep.
And we target at the default mode network, which is closely associated also with Alzheimer's disease.
Yep.
And so I did a case. I did a single case, and it wasn't published. It was presented in the Alzheimer's conference. But Linda Chow did that on 8 patients.
Wow.
And then what she also, they improved, you know, over 12 weeks. And she also found that, so she's also a professor of radiology in UCSF. So she used the MRI scan, fMRI, and found that actually after 12 weeks, the functions of the brain actually measured through fMRI improved significantly as well.
Wow.
Before it improved in the default mode network.
Yeah.
So here she did an independent study. The subjects, she used a similar scale, ADAS-Cog, and she did the use MRI and found that even through imaging, you know, it confirmed the
changes.
Measures. So that's fantastic because, you know, you can argue about whether it should be a placebo study and all that, but imaging is imaging.
There's exactly. You can't argue with it.
It's a placebo, right?
So, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So I thought that was great. And that, now we are doing this.
So she's using the 40 Hertz. Is it delivered through your devices or through the intranasal and transcranial?
Yeah,
so it's not like with the rat study where it's actually just in the room, so to speak.
Right.
It's actually getting in to the, so that makes a whole lot of sense. And so improved function over a 12-week period is a pretty short period of time. I wonder what would happen if you did that for a year, you know, with
yeah, the one thing about this in Alzheimer's disease is, see, Alzheimer's disease is neurodegenerative. So the person will just keep declining and they decline because of the genome, you know, the function of the genes. And there's not much you can do until you can maybe edit the genes or something like that. You can change the gene in some way. So users of our device will unfortunately have to use it forever for the rest of their lives because this is to stop the degeneration. But the good thing is our devices are home use.
Yeah, they're easy to use. Yeah.
Now, so I have to say that, you know, these studies are just a few subjects. It's very easily dismissed with, you know, it's statistically. So we reserve our our judgments or claim until we've done the full study. So that's
But the thing is, Dr. Lu, if you have a loved one who has Alzheimer's now, and you have a, and this is a, you know, my approach with my mum, I can wait 10 years, 20 years for various clinical studies to prove that, say, hyperbaric works or photobiomodulation works or, you know, these things. But these are pretty low-risk interventions. So my argument is, if it's my loved one, I'm definitely trying it, you know, like I want to use it, even if these studies are preliminary studies and they're not yet fully accepted by the scientific community. There's a value for the person listening to this recording who wants to do something proactive now, who has a loved one who's suffering from something like this, to try, you know. And if we wait forever until all of the clinical trials for everything is done, you know, we all have to weigh up our own risk reward scenario. But you know, in the case of my mum, we were given no hope that she would ever have any quality of life again. Massive brain damage, unable to even, she didn't know her name, no memory, no ability to move anything. By having an approach that says, well, I'm going to try everything that is fairly low risk. So I did the risk assessment on each of the interventions that I used with her. And if it wasn't a high risk, I'm going to put it in the bag to do. We're going to do this. And that multi-pronged approach, now I can't say specifically, it was definitely the V-Lite 8110 that did it, or if it was the hyperbaric that did it, or if it was the functional genomics or the epigenetics or the nootropics. But it worked. And she is an anomaly, and she's an exceptional case. And I think it's really important that, you know, we have the right to sort of, in these low-risk technologies, to have a go, you know, and try it. If you've got a loved one where it's time-bound, and you need help quickly. And this is why, you know, these preliminary studies are just as important, I think, as the full-blown, clinical trials that cost a lot of money and a lot of time and a lot of effort on a lot of people's part to actually have. So I think it's exciting that we have these preliminary trials.
Yeah, the devices in North America, like the U.S., so we fall under the category that is the guidelines of FDA defining this as a low-risk general wellness device. Mm-hmm. So we're not regulated in the U.S. In Canada, where we're based, we're considered a consumer device because mm-hmm. it's safe, it's low-risk. You know, it's a very similar category. So so we don't make a claim because it's not a medical device. So we have slightly modified version for medical devices that's undergoing this. It's not a lot different. The talking about what your mom's gone through, we have a study that's going on at Boston University for traumatic brain injury. Mm-hmm. And again, that's suspended because of pandemic, but that is an ongoing study, and Margaret Laser, the professor there, mm-hmm. Has published some papers already, and she's got, I think, some that's not yet published, but she's talked quite a lot about traumatic brain injury getting treated with photobiomodulation. She's doing this study with what we have. She's done a number of presentations. I think that's being submitted for publications in the case of athletes, professional football players. Mm-hmm. So they go to repeated, you know, banging on the head, and they get the CTE. CTE, which is as they get older, they get this. The symptoms are similar to Alzheimer's disease and dementia. Yep. So it's degenerative, and what's happening is this repeated blows to the head has created a situation where the tau accumulates and starts strangling the neurons in your brain. It goes through the atrophy. then get to a stage where a number of them became suicidal. They get severely depressed. They're, you know, with atrophy, you're going to be cognitively impaired. There is a number of you know, professional sportsmen, football players who retired, who actually have written testimonials about this and how they recovered. They're trying to tell each other. And but again, we need to do these studies to be sure that it is doing what we think it's doing.
Yep.
But you can check this out. One of them is Larry Carr. His last name is Carr, C-A-R-R.
Yep.
So you can Google and find his blog. He's talking about that. He was, you know, he was interviewed by several newspapers.
Uh-huh.
And it's purely, for him, it's purely this. And he learned about this because he went to Boston University, where there's supposed to be the hub of research and footballers, retired. These are American football players' brains.
Mm.
So he went to see Anne McKee, who is like probably the biggest name in the research for CTE in the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And she connected him to Margaret Naser,
mm-hmm.
who got him treated with this, and now he's writing about it.
So wow, that's brilliant.
We hope to prove it.
Yep, even though it's anecdotal. Yeah, it's anecdotal, but it's actually, it's one person's life that's been changed just through this.
Yeah.
So Margaret Naser, I'll look her up.
Well, he's not the only one. There was another paper that was just published with a professional hockey player, ice hockey, who got treated, again, by Linda Chow at UCSF.
Mm-hmm.
And he had, you know, brain injury, all this stuff, and now his symptoms improved, and she did. Now, what she did was very interesting. That's never been done. She's a professor of radiology, and she used MRI scan and found that his brain actually regrew because
of
MRI.
Yep.
They could measure the volume.
Wow.
The growth of the volume in the brain.
Wow.
So that is quite profound. I can send you this link.
Yes, please.
Hang on. Actually, it hasn't been published. I've got the pre-published.
The pre-published, you won't have to wait.
The approval of publication. So it'll come out in Frontiers of Neurology in maybe the next couple of issues. Yeah.
Yep, brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. I mean, this is an exciting area of medicine that, you know, looking at all of these things. And whether it's for mitochondria for wellness and producing more energy, and you know, at the basis of so many diseases is mitochondrial insufficiency and problems with the mitochondria. Anything that can help support the mitochondrial is going to help everybody, probably. So it's an exciting area.
Just interrupting the show to let you know about my longevity and anti-aging supplement range. I'd love you to go and check it out. Go to my website, lisatarmaty.com, and hit the shop button, and you'll see a curated range of supplements, the latest in anti-aging, longevity, health optimization, performance optimization. I've gone out into the world, interviewed the most amazing doctors and scientists, as you'll know if you follow the show, and gone and got some of the best products that are out there. Stuff that I give to my family, that's what's in my range. So go and check it out at lisatarmaty.com.
Look, Dr. Lou, I won't keep you much longer because you've been very, very generous with your time today.
No problem.
It's been marvellous. I'm absolutely fascinated with this area, and I really want to thank you for the work you're doing, because it is due to people like you that, you know, the one of the reasons why my mum is now completely normal again after, you know, this long battle. And it's one of the tools and devices that was very, very helpful for her. And no, I can't prove that clinically in a clinical trial setting, but that is my belief. And therefore, it was really important for me to share this information about photobiomodulation and to give people the awareness to be able to start to know what it is about and to do a deeper dive themselves and to watch out for the studies that are coming through and to try your devices out. So, Dr. Lou, where can people contact you and your team and check out the devices? Actually, we've got a code. I've got a code TARMATY, just the word TARMATY at checkout. If anybody wants to buy one of Dr. Lou's devices, you can use that and get a 10% discount. just use the word Tamati at checkout. His team has kindly provided that for me. So Dr. Lou, where can they reach out to you and your team, and what's the best way to do that?
Yeah, go to the website. You can, there is a page where you can ask questions, or you write to info@vlight.com.
info@vlight.com.
People address into it. And yeah, so next time we can talk about what it does for sports.
That'd okay, excellent. Yeah, because this is you mentioned before we went into the interview and started recording that this is this new area that you're going into for sports people to help with things like coordination and motor abilities. So this is another very exciting area of research.
Yeah, yeah, and also how to handle, you know, the stress of a competition.
That's huge.
Yeah, and we're also about to start a study on meditation.
Ah, that's what we haven't covered.
Study. Yeah. So we'll see what comes out of it. Meditation is super exciting. We've found that. Especially for long-term meditators.
Yes.
And they get, long-term meditators have endogenous gamma in the brain, you know, they get switched on to that state quickly. But we can, we have another device called a NeuroPro where we can pulse from anything from 0 to 10,000 hertz. And long-term meditators have a window. You get into that particular frequency, they just get into an altered state right away.
Wow.
That's very exciting.
Wow, that's exciting. So I'll be able to, you know, like instead of spending 40 years trying to work out how to meditate properly and to quickly get into these altered states that happen in meditation, we may be able to just plug in a device, your device, and get there much, much quicker into a relaxed and meditative state and have the right brain waves going. So that's it. So you've got, can you just explain before we do wrap up the different brain waves and what is stimulated by the photobiomodulation and what is downregulated as far as brain waves goes?
Yeah, we are noticing that we can induce, you know, certain brain waves and influence the brain waves in the brain, hopefully to, you know, for the brain to function better.
Yeah.
So when your brain gets into a certain state, whether you're relaxed or you're stressed, you're processing information or you get into a certain zone, they can be identified with certain brainwave patterns. Mm-hmm. If you are suffering from attention deficit, your brainwave patterns are exhibited in a certain way. We're all different too. And so we recognize that, and we're still in a learning process. You know, I give you an example. You are maybe not able to focus and pay attention because, say, your brain is locked into the very slow waves. Mm-hmm. And it's difficult to get out of it.
Yep.
And if you can, so this is hypercoherence. And if you can break that up, and I think there's a way to break it up by introducing asynchronous patterns, and you can free yourself out of this locked in.
Wow. And situation. Change your brainwave state.
Yeah, that's hypothetical, but we're going to do a lot of studies to do that. We have this very advanced model. It's going through beta testing now. It's going to help us to explore, because now we'll be able to see, okay, this person getting his EEG is looking this way. Is not right, and we want to change it to this. Mm-hmm. Then let's induce a certain brainwave wavelength to correct it, and see what happens. That's hypothetical. And I just did a presentation for the neurofeedback conference, talking about various types of brain stimulation, and people are trying to achieve that state. But I think we'll be closer than anybody else, where we can do, you know, and a closed-loop processing. If your brain is showing this EEG, but you want to achieve another one, it automatically reset the parameters to correct it right away.
That would be so powerful, because then I'd be able to go from a state of high performance into a state of relaxation within minutes, perhaps. and then to sleep perhaps and lower my stress levels, you know. As someone who has problems with too much brain, I need to be able to slow things down. So being able to do something like that and change. So which are the gamma, so you got alpha, beta, theta, gamma, which ones are you wanting to upregulate if you're wanting to increase cognitive performance as opposed to reducing stress and slowing down?
You know what I'm finding is when your brain is encoding, processing information and trying to absorb, is encoding at very high frequencies, like high gamma, maybe 80 gamma. Hertz, you know. And when you are reproducing it, it could be 40. I'm trying, and then I've seen studies should be 10, because 10 is where you're more relaxed as well. And then there are cognitive performance enhancement where they show you should be coupled with memory processing data, which is quite very slow, above, let's say, 4, 5, 6 hertz, and gamma. So you reproduce it where the gamma fast wave is actually coupled with the slow wave. So in the slow cycle, you see the fast ones.
Wow.
And that is all possible, just knowing which part of the brain is being produced.
Wow.
So that for cognitive enhancement, I'm actually looking at that right now. But I say, you know, if you are learning, you're training, you're trying to process information, you want to help your brain by, you know, if you can induce fast frequencies doing that. And when you go into competition, you want to be collected and you want to be able to reproduce it. And not too slow, you want to be, you know, perhaps 10 hertz, which is the alpha, to keep you. For a tennis player, you've got someone who is very, very highly ranked in the world circuit, who's using our device, the alpha.
Wow.
And winning. So,
well, that's good.
So that is, that is because, you know, a tennis match goes on over 5 hours.
Yeah, crazy.
You know, all the time you've got to be strategizing and thinking and not just like reacting all the time, right?
Yep.
So that's...
So we may be able to, in future, be able to influence the state that we want to be in for that particular time, whether that's distress reduction or whether that's high performance or whether that's, you know, cognitive enhancement. So that's a really exciting area to be involved in.
There's a lot to be done.
Yeah.
It's very exciting.
Yeah. And not all of us have got, you know, 10 hours a day to sit around on a mountain in Tibet learning from the monks, unfortunately. That would be fantastic. But if we can shortcut that process, perhaps, to getting to the right brainwave state.
Well, meditation studies are dealing with people who are already pretty advanced. But
yeah,
get them into that stage like this as a snap of a finger, you know.
Wow.
Very quickly.
That sounds excellent.
Yeah.
That sounds like something I need for sure. Okay, Dr. Lou, well, thank you very much for your time today, for all this incredible work that you're doing, all the good that you're doing in the world. Thank you very much. On behalf of my mum as well, thank you very much. It's been fascinating to talk to you. So everybody go to vlight.com. That's VIELIGHT.com. And if you're wanting to purchase any of the devices that are available to the consumer, use the code TAMATI at checkout and get a 10% discount. And if you've got any questions for Dr. Lou and his team, please reach out to him there on the contact page there. So Dr. Lou, thank you very much for your time today.
Well, thank you for having me.
It's been fantastic.
That's it this week for Pushing the Limits. Be sure to rate, review, and share with your friends. Head over and visit Lisa and her team at lisatamati.com.